Coming Up Next Time podcast is brought to you in part by Built to Ride. Head over to builttoride.ca and pick up some coffee or apparel. Use the exclusive listener code COMEUP when you check out for an additional 20% off your order. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the podcast. At 46, my next guest has accomplished a great deal in his career. Even still, he's never placed second and third in the same race. From winning the Erzberg Rodeo five times after three disqualifications, he stood on the top step six times at Romaniacs. Known by most as the GOAT, coming up next, the silent assassin, Graham Jarvis. So, how are you? And first off, thank you for taking my call, man.
Yeah, so good.
Nice.
We're in Spain.
Yeah, Spain. Like, the closest I've been to Spain is Portugal, and that whole area just seems amazing. Like, I was in Madrid, I think, for like 7 hours, which doesn't really count.
Yeah, it's good weather, good riding. It's hard to beat, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah. The riding must be world class, I guess, if it attracted you. Like, reading through your book, you just wanted to go to the northern part of England was because they had rocks. Like, you were such a little kid. I could only imagine the grown-up version.
Yeah, that's it. Taking it to another level, moving to Spain to ride my bike.
And how do you find being in Spain? Like, I know that your background is trials, and the Spanish trials riders tend to be some of the most dominant in the sport. So I imagine you're finding some pretty good riding companions.
Yeah, there's some good local riders. They're always keen to come out and ride and make new trails as well. Got a little team that are clearing gullies, and it's good.
Nice. So I guess, like, we don't even know each other, but we do have Stephen Ford in common.
Yeah,
that's kind of weird. Like, how small the world is.
Yeah, I've known Fordy since I started riding, and go back a long way.
Yeah.
Back to the trials days.
He's probably one of the humblest guys I've ever met, not going to lie. Like, I don't know if you listened to his story on the podcast. I don't imagine that you tune into the podcast, but if you had, it's a pretty crazy one.
Yeah, I kind of know his story, and he's had a few ups and downs in recent years, isn't he? So,
yeah.
You know, he's, like you say, he's just a good guy. I mean,
certainly he is, man.
Good friend.
Yeah, fair enough. So I'm going to ask you a couple of questions, I guess. One of the big things coming up here is like Father's Day in North America. I don't know how it happens in England or in Spain, but in my research, trying to like get some background on you, I found an interview that your dad had, and so I was just wondering what it's like to have such a like a huge supporter in your background.
Yeah, I think their mom and dad were really good, because they weren't, my dad didn't ride, or, you know, they weren't into it at all. So we kind of took up trials, and then they got involved as well with the club. It was a good family thing, and they just, no pressure at all. It was just kind of, I do what I want to do, and they never had to motivate me or anything. It was just supported whatever I wanted to do, so couldn't ask for any more than that.
Yeah, no, and he got off pretty easy, only having to buy you one bike. Like, and then
yeah, he didn't have to buy the bike, but he invested a lot.
Yeah,
traveling around the world. I kind of feel like I should owe him something.
I think you paid him back. He's so proud of you, man.
Yeah, I hope so. It was worthwhile.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I guess they were taking the piss on you. I wish I could remember the podcast. It wasn't too long ago. They did like a video and stuff, and they interview him at the end. Motor or something. But yeah, he just seemed to really dig it. They were teasing you about crashing through the garage that made you like a Instagram famous, and then he said he was just they were asking him about, if you were like that as a kid, and he knew that. And then he told the story of you riding down the brick wall and flipping the bike around the other way. He's just blown away by it. So,
yeah, that's it.
Yeah. So, you got, I guess, I don't know, what inspired you to write the book, to be honest? Like, you're such a quiet guy. I couldn't imagine you just coming up with the idea.
Yeah, the guy approached me, done Dougie Lampkin's book before, so he said, did I want to do one? But it's just nice to tell the story. Hopefully people kind of see it, how I got to where I got. And it took a lot of years.
Yeah.
And people kind of think it's just natural and it all comes easy, but it never does.
No, like they say, it takes a decade to generate overnight success. And I think you've been at it a little longer than a decade. So.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. When do you think in your career it started to snowball to becoming sort of what it is today, like with the world recognition and everything else? Outside of the sport, I guess.
Yeah, it's kind of all grown together. I took up hard enduro, and then the sport obviously grew, and then social media was growing at the same time. So I was the first to kind of do some trick stuff, I suppose, on the enduro bike. So I was kind of first doing that and got me a lot of followers, you know, away from winning races.
Yeah.
And so it's a lot of it, so it's social media that's made the difference, isn't it? But and then the races have grown more popular as well, so kind of, you know, it's a good time to take up the sport, kind of grown together with the sport.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, timing was in your favor, that's for certain. Another thing I was wondering about today and just sort of came into my mind is with like talking with 40, listening to other riders from your generation and some of the guys between then and now, everyone seems to be pretty humble. Not a lot of bragging, not a lot of flash. But nowadays, it seems the new generation are really focused on the flash. Do you see that impacting?
Yeah, I say that I've been humbled a lot in my life, but I'm like to think I'm a humble guy.
Yeah.
Been down a lot as well as up, so you appreciate, I think when you've had all the struggles, you appreciate it a lot more, don't you, and realise that you've got to keep working regardless of whether you're winning anything or how many followers you've got. You can't stop working.
Yeah, work seems to be the big driver. You really beat yourself up with losses throughout the book. Do you still do that now?
Yeah, not to the same extent, but yeah, I've had some. Yeah, I just wasn't as successful as I'd like to be in trials. So, kind of, some ways it feels like a failure.
Yeah,
the hard enduros has made up for it, and made it all worthwhile.
Yeah, it seems like a hard enduro is definitely where you excel. You're smooth, deliberate. Kind of what style of riding continues to put you on the podium?
Yeah, the sport is just kind of perfect for me. That, you know, in the trials we had some long distance stuff, and the Scott Trial and the longer stuff where you're riding on your own more non-stop always suited me. The stopping and starting with the trial, and it kind of became more of a team kind of thing, and just the long distance stuff just suits my style.
Nice.
Kind of why I gave up super enduro as well, because that was kind of never me. I could do okay, but it was never going to be fully my style.
Yeah, I understand that. The I guess the North American version is like arena cross.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, short heats, lots of explosive energy, and then no chance to make a mistake.
Yeah, that's it.
So another one I wanted to more like pat you on the back for was in 95 at Hawkstone. There was a trials competition where you were trying to make a step up and the cable broke just as you were at the top. You end up bouncing off that little stone lip there and just, you catch yourself and drift all the way back down the hill, and you never fell, never got off the bike. Like, it was like hands down the greatest example of balance I've ever seen.
Yeah, you develop a certain instinct, I suppose, just to stay on the bike.
Yeah,
that was just a crazy situation. We'd had these special throttle cables, and it wasn't the first time it had snapped. So, and I had the same thing with swing arms as well. I had these special swing arms, and they kept breaking. Stuff like that shouldn't happen, should it? But
no, I mean, but a lot of times you run prototype bikes, so I guess things are meant to break. That's how they find out.
Yeah, that's it. I kind of I was the first on the Scorpio. So that was always a new bike, never a proven bike. So sometimes think, well, wonder whether I could have done better on a more established brand bike. But
yeah,
it's all relevant now.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I mean, no, spilt milk and all that. It was just I don't know. I guess the neatest thing about reading your book is that I'm still sort of, I'm only 2/3 of the way through. I got some reading to do. It's just the way you wrote it in a way that's kind of multimedia style, because you'd be like, here's a race, and then on YouTube I saw this video, and so a guy could like follow along that way. Did you mean for that to happen, or is that something that just sort of organically came around?
Yeah, the guy that did the book, he kind of most of it was him. The way it was written, everyone can understand it.
Yeah, that's fair. Another funny thing from the book, I guess, and then I'm going to get away from the book, is just in the beginning you were talking about schoolboy, and I didn't understand, because being from North America, from Canada, we don't have like a schoolboy league, they're just peewees. So I kept getting this mental image of Jarvis on a trials bike dressed like Angus Young from AC/DC.
Yeah, the schoolboy or youth classes, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah,
it's the trials had the different categories, so it was good you could progress through the age categories for the British Championships.
Yeah,
so it was a good, well established championship.
Nice. Now I guess you've got Jarvis Land. Is that the real official name?
Yeah, Jarvis Land in Spain. It's part of the Jarvis Signature Tours.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, that's my place in Spain. And we've got other countries that are run, you know, it's like a franchise type thing. People can rely on a good tour, good guides, good trails, supported by Husqvarna.
Nice.
All good bikes. Just to give people the opportunity to go to different countries, get a good all-round experience of riding in the country, and giving people the opportunity to have a good adventure.
Oh, nice. And how's the pandemic affected that?
Yeah, it's pretty much killed it. But, no, to be fair, you know, Spain's been difficult. You know, obviously, travelling between countries is pretty, been impossible, but you know, Turkey's been ticking over. The Russians have been able to get there quite a lot. It's been up and down depending how it's been.
Yeah.
Every country is different, isn't it? But and then Panama's going quite well. They've been getting a few customers, but I'm sure it'll all come together now. It's getting a little bit better.
Nice. I guess when I reached out to you about this, you're on your way into Ligeris XL, and then that got changed in a hurry. Has that been like the, I don't know, sort of like the blueprint for how things have been going through 21?
Yeah, it's the first race we've been to, and then it's been cancelled, so it was a bit unfortunate. We did something, didn't we? But I'd been walking the track all week, so that was a waste of time. It was always a risk, wasn't it? But
yeah,
you know, at least they tried to do something, and then Erzberg's cancelled, so the next one's in Italy.
Italy. Nice. What race is that one going to be?
Aberstoney, it's called. It's a new race, new venue.
Okay.
So I don't know exactly the format, but normally in Italy they're good races, well-supported.
Nice. And I guess, are you going to be hitting up Romaniacs this year in July?
Yeah, and then 2 weeks after that is Romaniacs, so should be good.
So I heard it was a pretty tight week. Our Canadian boy, Tristan Hart, has been invited to, or he's going over to
Romaniacs this year. His goal just wants to beat that one. Then he wants to go back to Erzberg for next year because it got canceled this year. And his plan is to stop you from getting your sixth title there, which I don't know.
Yeah.
Six is crazy. I don't know, like you're the same age as me. I don't know how many more years you have ahead of you, but I imagine, you know,
not too many.
Yeah, exactly. Like who are we kidding? Are you going to strive to get six and then just sort of step away and leave Taddy to struggle?
Yeah, that would be a nice way to go out, wouldn't it? But, you know, it's no point just focusing on that. There's a lot of other races and just enjoying riding as well.
Hell yeah.
And creating a little bit of stuff for after riding.
Yeah, that's the best part. Like when I was talking with Tristan about his career or what have you, he's had a number of major events that have put him out for a year here and there. And I asked him what his plan was after, and he has one. He's a young guy, so that's kind of nice. But I have talked to some other fellas who never had a plan. Just like the end of the career comes up on them and just like, boom, here you go, buddy, real life. Like, it's kind of nice.
Yeah, that's it. It's difficult to get a transition because you focus on riding. It's hard to do other stuff at the same time, and there's not enough money to just retire and live your life.
Yeah.
It's going well. We've got the junior team, the race gear, the tours. So hopefully we can keep building on that.
Yeah, you totally launched everything, hey? Jarvis Land, a new clothing line. I don't even know how to, like, I was looking here to try to buy some stuff from the clothing. So how do people do that?
Yeah, so it's just taking a little bit of organizing, as you can appreciate.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not my field, so, I'm going from rider to some business ideas. So it's kind of, but it's getting there. You know, we've got a new website coming soon, and then getting the distribution of the race gear. You know, it's just bubbling under the surface, building the brand, and then people don't fully understand what the signature tours are, the race gear. It's the race gear is different. It's obviously replica Jarvis stuff, but so it's a little bit different to all the sponsors. The idea is to do it a little bit differently. And you can get your customized name and number on.
Oh, wow.
Stuff like that. It's kind of factory looking gear. And then hopefully it'll diversify into some other models.
Yeah. And so the signature tours, like when you imagined it, like, as you know how like planning meets reality kind of thing. And clearly the COVID thing screwed your planning. But like, I imagine the ideal is that you'd have spots around the world where there'd be sort of locals on like the pro level who just know the terrain, and then you just pair them off with guests.
Yeah, so Jarvis Signature Tours, it's a brand. It's people. Some people probably think it's me traveling around the world and just riding different places, which to a certain extent it is. That's the idea, to ride in different places. But we want a good base. So we've got the bikes there all the time in different locations, and it's, each tour runs by itself, but the consistency of the terrain, terrain for all abilities is the idea.
Yeah.
The hard enduros for the minority, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Relatively.
Yeah.
So we want to cater really good for the lower level options on trail. If you want hard enduro, you can. If you want easy, you can. If you just want a holiday, cruise around, we can do that as well.
Oh, nice.
And it gives me the chance to go different places as well. Well, that's my favourite part about riding, just finding new terrain, new countries.
Yeah,
seeing what's happening around the world.
I was going to ask how much of the world you've managed to explore on two wheels, because pretty much I feel you've been invited to most places. So
yeah, I've got a lot of countries covered, but there's a lot to go at.
Yeah.
It's a big world, isn't it? You obviously, more countries are becoming more restricted for riding as well. So, it's going to become more appealing to jet to somewhere and be able to have that freedom of riding, isn't it?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's getting more difficult in Europe and US and Canada and a lot of places.
Yeah, trail access seems to be the biggest burden that we all share. It's all under threat everywhere, right? Like with environmental movements, land ownership, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's it. So having that freedom is a great thing to have, isn't it? To go ride your bike different places.
Yeah. Yeah, not everybody can afford to buy a farm. Like as a well-traveled guy, did you ever keep any pets as a kid? Did you ever keep any pets? I do. There was one thing I wanted to bring up before I forgot. It was just the ants. Like you had a van full of ants, and I don't understand how you could even sleep there. Yeah.
They couldn't trust him with cats and dogs.
No, so you got pet ants. That's just...
They're easy to look after. They looked after themselves. That was the thing.
Yeah, independent.
Low maintenance. Yeah.
No, I just... When I came to that part, I was just laughing my ass off. You're talking about, like, ants living underneath your passenger seat, sneaking out to grab the food you dropped down there, and just like, oh my god.
Yeah, I think I've not heard of anyone else having an ant's nest in the van.
No, buddy, you are hands down the first and most likely the only.
Yeah, they kept themselves to themselves under the chair.
Yeah,
they didn't bother anybody.
That's and then I guess further on, Malcolm and Rhonda, the reaction that Malcolm had with your van and the state of things made it sound like a messy teenager.
Yeah, I wasn't the tidiest. I'm still not the tidiest now, but I've got a lot better. But it was low budget racing as well.
Yeah.
So we were on a low budget, but there's no excuse. I should have tidied the van up. I'm the same now. I've got a messy van.
That's awesome. So do you ever miss those low budget days? Like all the struggle and stuff?
Not really. I've been there and done it. I've struggled enough, but I appreciate it now that I can just get in, bike's ready, Damo's there with the bike, and if I never had them tough times, you wouldn't appreciate it as much, would you?
No, I guess not, hey? Like, if you're 17 and you get a factory ride, how would you ever know what it's like, you know? So what do you like most about riding these days? I'm confident that when you show up to any of the events, you've got a lot of friends on arrival. So is that a huge benefit?
Yeah, that's it. It's good fun. It's pretty fairly relaxed. You know, the races are getting more professional, aren't they? But as a sport, you know, everybody's pretty relaxed and friendly, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. I remember an interview that you did in the film 50 Years of Kicks with Colton Haker, and you were sort of talking about the difference from when you began and when he started. Just like things being more professional and getting more serious and the stakes getting higher and higher. Is the pressure on you now more than ever, like performance-wise?
I don't really feel the pressure as much because it's just... you know, nobody expects me to keep riding at my age anyway. So if I retired now, I've not really, you know, I'm happy with what I've achieved. So it's kind of less pressure in that way.
Well, that's cool. I would have wondered if just like, you know, in Hollywood, as the talent gets on in their career, they start getting more weird and desperate about things.
Yeah, well, I've always been weird and desperate. But, yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. Oh, so Husky, they renewed with you. Are you on a year-to-year contract now?
Yeah, for some reason, they don't want to sign me up for the next 5 years. It's 1 year at a time.
Oh. Is that maybe something that they've done with everyone or just for you?
I think just because I'm a little bit older, maybe they're not sure which way, what's going to happen. Yeah.
That's not very...
It's good. Yeah, neither do I, to be honest. The 1 year at a time is better, and you don't know how you're going to feel in another year or results or what's going to happen, so it doesn't matter too much.
Yeah, I guess.
It's nice to have something, you know, more, something solid after the racing, isn't it? But that's kind of down to me, and it's not the factory's job to give me a job after racing, is it?
No, I guess not. Like, yeah, it would definitely be all up to you. Carve your own path. And you started Team Jarvis. Is that with Husky?
Yeah, so it's supported by the factory, but in a small way. So it's just trying to start something, you know, give the riders an opportunity. Young riders, it's difficult. Below factory riders, there's no real support and opportunities for them. So give them an opportunity, and, you know, it's good to keep the Jarvis brand out there as well. Hopefully it could carry on.
Yeah.
When I stop racing, you know, they can carry on winning with a Jarvis brand would be nice.
Yeah, I don't see any reason why that wouldn't work out. And you sort of touch about that, or touch back on that throughout your book, about sort of how you had a number of lucky breaks, people trusting you, giving you a hand, like a hand up and everything, I guess. Not a hand up, I guess that's the wrong way to put it, but support.
Yeah, that's it. You know, all that knowledge that I've got over the years, it's just crazy not to pass that on and help somebody, isn't it? So if they've got the ability and the desire to do it, you know, we've got to give them that knowledge to get them there quicker.
Yeah. Another thing that you mentioned, sorry, was with Marty and Doogie Lampkin. Like, you say they had a really cool or really special relationship. I know they're father and son. But do you find those kinds of relationships help to build champions?
Yeah, Mark obviously could pass on all the knowledge. He'd been there and done it. And then I had Malcolm as well. So yeah. We just went about things completely differently. We're similar kind of style. You know, Malcolm's a little bit quieter. Mark was a little bit more outgoing, and Dougie as well.
Yeah.
So we was always the quieter ones, but we still achieved a lot. So it all worked good.
Yeah. I think, yeah, passing on the knowledge really helps a guy out, I think. Like with Hard Enduro, are you finding it now that everybody seems to be just trying to make it hard as hell? Like you take Erzberg, for example, you've been there a few times, and it seems as though Carl continues to make things a little more challenging every year, and the terrain always changing. And now here in North America, they have a series, and it just seems to be that they believe the riders want to be punished.
Yeah, I think that's what it's about, isn't it? To a certain extent, you know, you want people to have a chance of finishing, don't you? Or,
yeah.
You know, whatever their goal is. It's got to be a little bit of fun as well, isn't it? You want to be able to ride your bike. A good variation of terrain is always good, isn't it? So you've got the difficult bits and a chance of finishing as well.
Yeah, the chance of finishing is ideal. Blowing up bikes along the path. What is your ideal variety then, I guess? Like if you were to make a series, what would you like to see in it?
Yeah, I think a good mix, you know, of a little bit of pushing, a bit of fast flowing stuff as well. And, you know, I can get the time normally on the harder bits, but I wouldn't want to do it for the whole race. You know, like Sea to Sky as well. The longer races aren't as fun for me either. You know, when you get past 5 or 6 hours, it becomes a little bit more survival,
yeah,
rather than racing. But you know, races like Sea to Sky are really good. The shorter races, 3-4 hours is enough. Yeah. Maniac was a lot better last year as well. It was 5-6 hours, and you know, other years it's been up to 8 or 9 hours, and it's just not fun at all.
Yeah, from what I understand for the season coming up here in Romaniacs, they're going to make you guys camp out one of the nights.
Yeah, that's it. It'll be interesting for a rough night's sleep. I don't sleep very good anyway, so I think it'll be okay.
And are you comfortable working on your bike? I know that you've been spoiled for a number of years with other guys taking care of it.
Yeah, I can do the basics if I have to.
Yeah.
I can change a filter.
Nice.
Tire if I really have to.
Hopefully you don't filter enough work before bed.
Yeah, that's it.
So with Erzberg, I wanted to ask, and I know everybody does, but the time when you came when you approached the line and Carl came out to tell you you've been disqualified, the video footage captures you just saying the words unbelievable. How gutted were you?
Yeah, it was heartbreaking, and you put all the effort in and hadn't won the race, and then you kind of quickly think that, you know, I was in the position to win the race and I was fighting for the win, so, you know, just looked at my performance down the road and was happy with that regardless of the actual result. Yeah. You just got to look at the positives.
So is that the thing, like the key to just keep pushing is to...
Yeah, it got kind of, you know, I was upset at the time, but then, you know, you realise that I'm actually capable of winning, so you just quickly move on, try to get your head around it and move on to the next race.
And then you did win, and I'm sure that felt like pretty rewarding. Were you in any sort of disbelief?
Yeah, it just had to come together on the day and make sure I rode the whole track and the checkpoints, and at that point I knew I was fast enough to win.
Yeah,
and had the ability. It was just putting it all together, and it finally happened.
So does it slow you down then? And that race, kind of like being thorough, like lots of second guessing, maybe impacted your final result?
Yeah, you're kind of certain places. You're just making sure you're on the track, doing all the checkpoints.
Yeah. So clearly that one will have been the most memorable. But of all the races, I guess, which one do you always look back on, like as one of those triumphs that just keep you going, I guess?
Yeah, the first Erzberg's got to be right up there, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then, you know, Romaniacs is one of the biggest races as well. There are lots of good memories with that.
Yeah, at Romaniacs last time, I guess one of our local guys, Howard Lawrence, caught up to you, and you made a little video of him, "You're never going to catch me, Howard." So do you have any memory of that moment, or is it just one of those?
Yeah, lots of people kind of ask me to say. I just say sometimes in foreign languages, I just repeat what they say. I could be saying anything, so I just do as I'm told.
That's awesome. Now you sound like a good sport, man. Like, you know, everybody. I guess because everybody knows of you, everybody gets the feeling that they know you. So does that ever get on your nerves at times?
No, it's cool that, you know, we're racing with amateur guys as well, and you meet so many nice people, so it's just cool.
Yeah, I feel off-road's got a lot of really nice people, so it's sort of kind of a weird culture to start out with.
Yeah, and everybody's got their own story, haven't they? So I like to listen to what they're doing.
Yeah, well, their own story, that's sort of like the part of this podcasting thing that I enjoy the most. I've gotten to meet now 21 people, and they've all shared their stories, and they're all pretty varied and unique, and it doesn't really matter how they're placing on the race scale. Their stories are just awesome. Okay, so going back in time, do you remember coming to Canada in 2011 to race Extinction?
Yeah. How could I forget?
Oh, I don't know. Like, I forget lots of stuff. How did you find that event? From what I understand, it was
probably... Yeah,
go ahead.
It's cool, yeah. Cool race.
And have you done other events in Canada?
I've done a few schools. At the same time, I think I did a school, and then so travelled around a little bit. Been there with some work trials, world championships years ago as well.
Oh, wow.
But looking forward to coming back sometime.
Yeah, you should come out here, like to Alberta again. There's plenty of insane space. The fella, Howard Lawrence, I mentioned earlier, is creating a loop out. He's calling it the Romaniacs loop. So I don't know how insane that'll be, but hopefully it's not 6 hours long. You never know. We have the terrain for it, so anything's possible.
Yeah, it'd be cool. Maybe a Jarvis signature tour Canada.
Pardon me? Yeah, Jarvis signature Canada. I think you could sell that one. Like, I know that all the local guys would sign up and they even know where they're going just to be on the tour.
Yeah.
But you'd definitely have to come on the first run. Oh, wow. Sounds like you're at an airport.
Yeah.
Malaga. Yeah. There you go.
It's good. Tourists are coming in. It's good.
Yeah,
it's a good sign when you hear airplanes.
Yeah, it's rather important. I think tourism moves money around the planet. If the track is your happy place, where is the place that you most enjoy riding?
Yeah, Spain is pretty hard to beat. No, the weather in perfect winters, you know, in UK and stuff, it became a little bit hard work in winters. Motivation was a little bit down, but, you know, Spain has given me a big boost for the, you know, fun factor.
Yeah.
Riding, go out every day, ride something different. Normally sunshine.
That
not
sounds
too much washing the bike off, just ride straight out of the house.
Sounds tough.
Living
man.
The dream.
Yeah, it is living the dream. Not washing the bike and always having sunshine.
Yeah.
What more could a guy ask for? You and Dougie Lampkin, are you guys still friendly rivals at this point in your careers?
Yeah, Dougie kind of took up hard enduro and then did a few races, and I kind of thought, here we go again. But
yeah,
he chose an easier life, I think.
That's awesome.
A more sensible life. He did the sensible thing.
Yeah. Do you find ghosts from the past, so to speak, coming to challenge you in some of these hard enduro events, like guys you used to rub bars with, coming out for one last kick at the can?
Yeah, there's not too many at
no.
46. They kind of all dropped off, but...
Yeah. I guess.
But, yeah, you see a lot of ex-trials riders have switched to hard enduro, so a lot of it is the same faces that I used to ride with, which is pretty cool. Mostly younger than me, but...
So why do you keep doing it then? At 46, you've really done it all. Like, you've been on top of the best podiums, or the hardest fought podiums that there are. So why do you keep doing it?
Yeah, I just still enjoy riding and challenging myself. So, you know, that's the first thing. And then, you know, races is still a lot of, you know, you've got your nerves and that involved. But it's not just about winning races. I still enjoy riding as well. But, you know, it's the excitement of doing a race as well, regardless of the result.
Like, I don't imagine that you need to win anymore, because you've done it. You've proven it. Like, you have to even prove it to yourself that you can do it at this point, you know, if there was anyone left to impress, I guess.
Yeah, that's it. And just finishing these races is a good satisfaction, you know what I mean? If you're on the podium, top five or whatever,
yep.
It's still quite an achievement.
Yeah, it is, man. Like, it is. Another thing I've noticed in a lot of interviews, the few that you've had, guys try to get you to comment on who the next up-and-comer is and all that kind of stuff. And I noticed you get cagey and you skirt all those questions. Why is that exactly?
I don't like talking about other riders. It's about me.
That's perfect. Yeah, I just realized, like, because in the prep, I just wanted to, you know, whatever, like, just find stuff out and try not to beat you over the head with the same stuff all the time, because I'm sure it's pretty boring. And
yeah, you know. Now there's a lot of good young riders. I think Manny's one of the stronger ones.
Yeah,
mentally, and a good rider, and obviously Billy and a few of the other guys. That, you know, Johnny's one of the older ones now, so but still capable. But, yeah, it's good to see so many riders in it.
And yeah,
some other manufacturers getting involved as well, which is cool.
I know you're a Husqvarna guy, but like, what other brands have done things that you've sort of like taken notice of? I don't know, things that have impressed you, changes they made, maybe, like
nearly all the manufacturers are involved, aren't they? When there's not from me, you know, obviously KTM and Gas, and it's all part of the same thing, but
yeah.
It's just good to, you know, you need that competition, doesn't it, to keep the races exciting, and you know, the manufacturers competing against each other as well.
Yeah.
Which is good. It's good for the sport.
Is there much brand rivalry? Because it seems to be hard enduro is dominated by the Husqvarna, KTM, Gas sort of umbrella. Is there like Coke versus Pepsi kind of happening with Sherco or USA? Or
yeah, they've had the they've had their fair share of successes, haven't they?
So, yeah.
You know, they've all got professional riders, so, you know, and they've obviously, they're in it to do well and win, aren't they? So,
yeah.
Everyone's pushing forward, development of the bike, suspension, tyres, engine.
Yep.
Everybody's keeps working.
That's fair. That's fair. So with things like suspension, I know you keep yours very soft. What about tires? Are you like a gummy tire kind of guy, or do you want something to last?
Yeah, we use the Michelin Extreme and majority of races. There was only one I used a medium at Sea to Sky where it was really dry rock and, you know, it just it kind of shreds the soft tires.
Yeah.
The Michelin Extreme is the best tire. You know, they're my sponsor, but they have upped the game.
Okay.
A lot. It's very good. Very, very good.
Yeah, I imagine tires over the years, over your career, you've been able to tell the difference.
Yeah, that's it. That's probably one of the biggest developments, you know, that the tires have just helped. It makes such a big difference, you know, but even with the right tire, if you haven't got the right moves, you know, soft moves, it can make a big difference. So we're playing around with the mooses all the time, the pressure and trying to get it right.
Is it one of those things that may never get right? Like, there's too many variables, so it's just sort of like...
Yeah, there's no exact science to it, so it's, you know, you're always a little bit, I guess, work and using the moves for a bit and embedding it in, and so, yeah, we're always trying to get it right.
I had a conversation with Chris Birch, and he was talking about in Canada, our bikes are set up in a way that he's never experienced anywhere else in the world. Basically, all of our controls are dipped really far forward. How much does bike setup impact your riding experience?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, your handlebar position, and that's personal preference, but suspension, you know, people, you can invest a lot in it, or, you know, the main thing is just get your springs right for your weight and little bits like that.
Yeah,
to make it better to ride.
When you're doing all these riding schools, you're having a lot of you know, talent show up, and some of these guys have like these blinged out rigs. So is there like a common theme that you see through the motorcycle enthusiast group that's a real detriment to them?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of guys used to turn up with the hard motocross tires or whatever. So the tires, but that doesn't happen as much now. People are more knowledgeable.
Yeah.
But I can never understand people on a training day keeping a big backpack on, but I don't, you know, whatever floats the boat.
I guess they're just out for the adventure. They need to have all their stuff.
Yeah, when you're practicing wheelies, you know, just take your bag off, put it on the ground. Yeah. You don't need it on.
That's fair. But don't want to lose your lunch, you know, like.
I think that's what it is. They got the sandwiches. They want the sandwiches getting nicked.
When you were on the come up, I guess, and you're being sort of toured around and romanced by the factory teams. What was the difference? What is your first impressions of factory teams versus today? Like the myths that have been dispelled through your career?
But you know, the ideal thing is you can turn up and you don't have to worry about the bike and you just have to literally get yourself there. I think, you know, it's a small thing, but just back in the trials days, it can wear you down, you know, all the travelling and preparing everything yourself.
Yeah.
It just that way just takes a big stress off your shoulders and you can literally just focus on your riding and walking the track and what you need to do.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I guess I always thought that, you know, free bikes, all that kind of stuff. And I guess they're not free because, like, pretty confident you worked pretty hard for your bike, even if it was like,
yeah, that's it. You don't have to worry about, you know, Damo's always on it with a bike. It's, you know, it's the best it can be.
Do you find, like, as an older guy, we always look back. Do you find the kids have an advantage today that you wish you had?
I think the social media is good for creating interest, isn't it? Something we never had. you always had to be polite to journalists and stuff and talk to them, which I didn't like doing.
No, yeah, I guess so. Hey, like, they get to communicate directly to the masses. There's nobody in between.
Yeah, that's it. And they can see, you know, you're in control a little bit, aren't you, of what, you know, how, what people see. And yeah, and they can see what you're doing, you know, every day. You can put something on and see where you are, and that connection with the fans is cool, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. You've managed to amass a huge following on Instagram. And is that, like, I guess you got fortunate, because I could see factory pressure to try and get a guy to establish a presence on social media. Do you get that kind of pressure?
When I started, the factories, you know, they didn't, it wasn't recognized that you had to do that. It was optional, but I enjoy doing it. So it's not, it doesn't seem like work. I find it fun. But now it is, you know, the factories expect you to do a certain amount of posts, and it's become part of the job, hasn't it? But
yeah, is it like contracted in now? They got to do so much a day kind of thing, or a week?
Yeah, I think they just expect so many per week. But
that's kind of,
the writers realize that it's good for them anyway, so everybody's kind of on it, aren't they?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, it's pretty much made its way into everybody's life at this point. You bake a cake, it goes on Instagram, so.
Yeah, I try to avoid putting pictures of food on. Cool. That's what I'm into.
Yeah. That's awesome.
So, I don't bake many cakes.
No, I didn't imagine. Like, reading your book, you're an expert at pasta and tomatoes, and that's about all.
Yeah, if the fans want to see what I eat, I can put it on. It's not really exciting.
No, it's not really, I don't think. I mean, I'm sure there's somebody out there who wants to know, but, like, by and large, the bulk of people could care less, I guess.
Yeah, that's it.
So you're not a married man, but you have a family. How's that being a family man and an elite athlete, I guess, like with all the demands of your job?
Yeah, really difficult, because I've got to be, you know, committed to riding and then balance it with my, got two kids. So
yeah.
Yeah, it's been up and down, not easy, but and it's still not easy, but, you know, just making the best. Yeah. What we can do.
That's fair. I mean, you got to bring home the money. And do you think your kids are going to be riders? Like,
my daughter rides. Yeah, my son's into football, so, you know, it's pretty cool.
That's all. And by football, you mean soccer, like in North America?
Yeah, that's it. Just cool that they're into something, and support them whatever they want to do.
That's awesome. And like, I guess it's kind of cool that you're not forcing them to be hard enduro athletes, you know, like some people do. They force their dreams onto their kids kind of thing.
Yeah, that's it. I wouldn't recommend it. It's a tough job.
I imagine, eh?
There's a lot of easier things to do.
Yeah. Do you ever think about what you might have done if you never carried on?
Yeah, it's hard to know, isn't it? What would I have done if hard enduro hadn't come along, or, you know, not been riding? I just don't know. I'd have probably, if you're that type of person, you put everything into something, don't you? You'd find something to do. But.
Yeah, imagine. Yeah, is that your personality archetype, like 100% focus?
Yeah, I think I need some kind of goal and setting goals and achieving stuff. And so it's whatever you do in life, isn't it? It doesn't have to be riding.
No.
So if you like achieving stuff, whatever level, amateur, professional.
Yeah. So what's the change of heart? How come you've gone from, like, the silent assassin to someone who takes interviews?
I actually like talking to people, believe it or not.
I do believe it, actually. Yeah, I heard that whatever, like, the silent side is just a facade. And then when you get talking.
Yeah. Yeah, I see. When I'm racing, I don't, you know, I'm into what I'm doing. I'm not very sociable, but, you know, and I was really shy as a youngster. Still am a little bit shy, so, but, you know, I like it. I like meeting people.
What was it like being shy and then getting great attention? Like, you talk about a lot of the pressure of being considered the next big thing before you manage to be the next big thing. So is that hard?
Yeah, it's just, interviewing that, I just find really awkward. But, and, you know, being in front of the cameras, talking to cameras, just naturally I find it difficult, but you know, you kind of, the more you do it, the easier it is, isn't it? And you relax a little bit more.
Yeah. I guess it just becomes
be myself.
Be yourself. Yeah. I feel like a lot of younger riders could identify with the being shy thing. Because your ability could totally, like, someone could learn to ride a motorcycle and do it well long before they develop their social self.
Yeah, that's it. You've got to be, got to have a certain amount of self-confidence to go out there and ride a bike in front of people.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you like the fact that the crowds, like at a Royal Maniacs event, on all the main features, there are just hundreds of people standing there. Does that bug you?
Yeah, it's cool because I'm so old. People just support me anyway now. They just like the fact that I'm so old.
Yeah.
I'm still riding.
Oh, man. I started riding, I guess, in 2018. And my buddy told me to check you out because we're the same age kind of thing. And he's just like, you know, you're not the only old guy on these things. And then I was just like, holy fuck, that guy can ride a motorcycle.
Aches and pains and stuff. Everybody's got them.
Yeah.
Just managing your small niggly injuries and stuff.
Yeah. What is the
aching bones?
Do you find that you get a lot of recurring injury at this point?
Yeah, there's always niggling injuries that are kind of older injuries that still niggle. But as long as it just niggles and you can carry on, it's not so bad, is it?
Yeah. Yeah. It's fair enough. Your love for the sport is greater than the distraction of the pain, I guess.
Yeah, it's not good being in so much pain, but you know, a certain amount.
Yeah,
it's just accept, don't you?
Yeah. So, what do you do for fun then? Like off the bike?
Yeah, there's not much time at the moment, but you know, there's lots of places to relax in Spain, so Malaga, to the beach.
So, as a guy in the modern media world, do you find that you have to be very careful or calculating with what you say or do? I mean, you always were very careful, so I don't know that it would make a difference, but
yeah, that's it. With the sponsors and stuff, you sometimes got to be careful.
Yeah,
but generally, you can just be yourself.
Okay, are they like that? Like they want like Graham Jarvis to be Graham Jarvis, not a version. Like they don't try to put brackets on you?
Yeah, that's it. I think the way the sport is, isn't it? Everybody's generally approachable, aren't they? Top guys are approachable.
Yeah.
You can talk to them. It's not always the case in bigger sports, is it? But
no. Yeah, that's the one thing too. Like inside the sport, you are a titan. And then when we hold sports side by each, off-road and enduro, it doesn't really get on a lot of people's radar, which I think is kind of crazy.
Yeah, see, but it's, you know, the sport, it's amateurs riding with professionals, isn't it? So it's unique, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
For a lot of sports.
Yeah, could you imagine a football game where half the players on the field just signed up for their first game?
Yeah,
that's it. It'd be chaos. It might be actually kind of fun. Who knows? Do you ever think that there's like somebody out there who would have been world class, but just never got the right support?
I think anybody that's got the desire to do it normally makes it, regardless of opportunities.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of more people that have had the support and not made it than the other way around, I would say.
Because like, it's more than just your talent on the bike. It's your mental ability and everything else. Like, I can imagine the pressure getting to some people pretty quick in their career and they just dive.
Yeah, I think motivation as well. You see a lot of riders that get to the top or somewhere near the top and then, you know, they've kind of got to where they think they can get and then the motivation goes down. So,
yeah. Is it maybe one of those things where chasing is better than catching?
Yeah, that's it. I think just a few people have got the discipline to keep doing it, isn't it? For year after year.
Yeah. It's got it.
Or crazy enough, should I say.
Crazy enough. That's a theme that seems to be coming up a lot, that everybody's a little bit nutty, not quite normal.
Yeah, there's something missing, isn't there?
Yeah, there has to be. So I'll ask you, maybe it's not a good question. But like, who is the craziest person you've ever ridden with or against?
Probably Billy. He's a little bit crazy, isn't he?
Yeah, he is actually. Yeah.
Yeah, you got it. He's done really well, and it's good to see. You know, brings excitement to the sport. He's a good personality, isn't he? So yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, he's a pretty big personality. That's for certain. I think he's hilarious.
Yeah, he's fun to be around. It's good to have him in the team. You know, never a dull moment. That's cool.
So, is there anything going on in the sport that you'd like to see change, or something that hasn't happened that you would love to see there?
I think the FIM World Championships is kind of a good step.
Yeah.
To have some kind of consistency with the rules. You know, before each race was doing their own thing, and you'd have to, you know, sometimes there wasn't rules for things that had happened. So as a rider, you want to know exactly what the rules are, don't you? About the track, you know, if you go off the track, whatever, if this happens or that happens, you know where you stand. So it all fits in with the sport becoming a little bit more professional and organised. But time will tell on that, whether these organisers kind of keep doing their own thing.
Hardenduro literally is in its infancy, I think, early life. I don't know. It isn't an old person by any measure.
Yeah, that's it. It's a new sport, isn't it? And people, obviously, it's one of the biggest sports in the motorbike world, isn't it? But
yeah,
it doesn't have that organisation yet as for a championship, does it?
No.
But in some ways, that's good as well, because it's kind of more relaxed and makes each race has been pretty special on its own, hasn't it? Regardless of a championship, so.
I think so. Like, they're all spectacular to watch. I mean, I wish the coverage was a little more like MotoGP, you know, with a camera everywhere.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
like the fact that it's sort of grassroots feeling makes it more feel attainable.
Yeah, that's it.
Like, literally, thank you very much, Graham. I appreciate you taking the time with me. Yeah, I'd like to do it again sometime.
Yeah, we can have a catch up. Yeah.
And seriously, when you come to Canada, because I know you will, you really should try riding out here.
Yeah, I've been there before. I've covered it most over the years, but it'd be good to come back and do a full tour again.
Yeah.
Schools and race gear, and it'd be cool.
Well, that brings us to the end of another episode. I want to thank my guests for taking the time to sit down and chat with me. A special thank you to you, my supporters. Without you, this would not be possible. If you enjoyed the show, give it a 5-star rating. And if you haven't already, be sure to like, subscribe, and share. If this is your first time listening, I encourage you to take the 3-episode challenge. Once again, thank you for your continued support, and stay tuned to find out what's coming up next time.